Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast on the UBS Market Moves Podcast channel. I am joined today on this Thursday morning by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor from Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. Shane, great to be with you as we're entering into the long 4th of July holiday weekend here in the U.S. We'll cover that a bit later in our conversation today. But first off, thank you, Shane, for dropping by this morning.
Absolutely. Good to be back with you, Dan. Thanks for having me. And, you know, I'm looking forward to an exciting 4th of July celebration.
Absolutely. So, Shane, let's cover a couple of topics. And of course, we will spend some time on the 250th birthday of the United States of America, which will be celebrated this coming Saturday, July 4th. Let's begin today with the Supreme Court. Now, the SCOTUS did issue a flurry of highly anticipated final opinions this week to conclude the 2025-2026 term. So a lot to cover, though. What are some key highlights or takeaways you would like to share with us today?
Yeah, that's right. The Supreme Court finished up their session, and as anticipated, they released a number of, you know, high-profile decisions this week. Start off with the one dealing with political contributions. I think this one is maybe a little misunderstood. The bottom line here is that now there can be greater coordination between campaigns and the political committees. Before, you couldn't coordinate your efforts. And so this, probably at the end of the day, at least for this election cycle, helps Republicans a little bit, as the RNC and other political committees like the NRCC and NRSC, which are the House and Senate campaign arms for Republicans, are a little bit better funded than their counterparts, the DNC, et cetera. So, you know, this helps Republicans and allows them to kind of almost have an infusion of campaign funds that were, you know, still there. It's just that they can be used in maybe a little bit better way for Republicans. So, small advantage for Republicans, again, on that decision. Another high-profile decision was transgender playing in women's sports, and could states ban that? And the conservative judges prevailed there and allowing states to have such bans in place. You know, I think maybe the highest profile case, though, was that of birthright citizenship, which, you know, everyone kind of assumed President Trump would lose in this one. And even President Trump kind of signaled in the past few weeks that he expected the Supreme Court to rule against him. And so what I find most interesting was, though, some Supreme Court justices left the door opening for, you know, Congress to act to stop things like known as, you know, birthright tourism, where someone may come into the U.S. purposely to have their child born here and therefore gain citizenship. So there still may be more to come on this issue, but these Supreme Court decisions and others captured, you know, the enthusiasm, whether it be frustration and anger or jubilation and support of these Supreme Court decisions on both sides. So, you know, I think, you know, these Supreme Court justice decisions will play into some politicking later this year, especially for those running for Senate and, you know, how they view any votes that they would take on any appointments to the Supreme Court in future years. So interesting decisions. And, you know, the Supreme Court, you know, will resume again, I think, in October and take up another slate of, you know, high profile cases, along with a lot of cases that are, you know, decided 9-0. I believe I saw an interview with Supreme Court Justice who said, Gorsuch, who said that roughly one-third of their decisions are unanimous. So while we see the high-profile ones that are more partisan, you know, keep in mind that a lot of their work is very collegial and, you know, brings them together.
Well, there was a lot to digest from the Supreme Court this week, so that was a very helpful recap and inventory, Shane. Aside from the Supreme Court, there is a lot to digest up on Capitol Hill as well, and there does remain several disagreements amongst congressional lawmakers and with the Trump administration as well, resulting in legislative items being held up. Now, with the month-long congressional recess soon approaching in August, what still needs to be resolved, Shane?
That's right. You know, start off with the housing bill, which was passed in big bipartisan votes in both the Senate and the House. President Trump has indicated that, you know, he does not prioritize it compared to the Save America Act, as we have discussed before. And so what was interesting was this week, Speaker Johnson formally sent bill to the White House, and this starts a 10-day clock. You may remember from, you know, your civics classes, a pocket veto. So I think that's what people expect, is the president to not sign this bill, and then Congress could vote to override and, you know, get this housing bill finally across the finish line. So it will be an interesting, you know, 2 weeks or so when it comes to that bill. Additionally, you've seen House operations grind to a halt because there is a disagreement by about a dozen hardcore right Republicans who agree with President Trump on the necessity of the Save America Act, that voter integrity bill that we've discussed. And they have stopped bills from moving forward on House floor. This week, they stopped the National Defense Authorization Act, which has been a bipartisan bill for over 60 years. And so a lot of House lawmakers are scratching their heads trying to figure out how they're going to get out of this mess and be able to process bills. It's unfamiliar territory that there's an intra-party fight that is blocking any, you know, legislation really from moving forward because the Senate action, or in this case, inaction. So, you know, they're trying to figure out ways to placate these lawmakers. And this week, what they tried to do was attach that Save America Act to the National Defense Authorization Bill. But that was not enough, as these hardcore right lawmakers you know, said, if we do that, the Senate will just strip it out of the base bill and continue to process the National Defense Authorization Bill without the Save America Act bill. So not only is this kind of intra-party fight putting the National Defense Authorization Bill in hot water, but it's putting a lot of other things in hot water. Usually at this point in the summer, the House is processing the 12 appropriations bills that fund all federal government operations. And that process is moving along in the House, but this intra-party fight may grind that to a halt. And so there are a lot of the talk in D.C. now is that the chances of a government shutdown on October 1st are increasing. That's not become the base case scenario yet. But it is very concerning for the ability for lawmakers to move anything across the floor. Additionally, you know, conversations between the lead Republican and Democrat in the Senate are starting to fray on the question of government funding. So, you know, things are getting tenser by the day here in D.C. And in this, you know, heat that we're having here, it's only going to get hotter. So, it's going to be a tense summer in D.C.
Well, there seems to be a lot at stake. As always, a lot of complexities with these negotiations, and I'm sure Shane will continue to track these legislative negotiations, developments in the weeks ahead as we quickly approach that one-month recess coming up in August. Now, putting that all aside, of course, want to spend some time as we close out today acknowledging how the United States of America turns 250 years old on Saturday, July 4th, just a couple of days away. And we will spend some more time on this when we speak next week on Top of the Morning with our colleague from the Chief Investment Office, Kurt Ryman. Though, Shane, do you want to hear some of your reflections, how the nation will be celebrating this notable milestone, including any highlights of events happening at the nation's capital this weekend in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, I love fireworks, so I'm looking very much forward to fireworks shows here down in D.C. The major one on 4th of July typically happens at about 9 p.m., but this year, because of the events and Trump rally, it's being pushed back to almost 11 p.m., so that may be past my bedtime, but it's supposed to be a 40-minute fireworks display, so that will be pretty awesome to watch. You know, besides fireworks, you know, around D.C. as well, the Great American Fair on the National Mall is very fun and interesting. They have a big Ferris wheel. Every state has a booth, and they're showcasing some of their, you know, state prides, whether it be, you know, maybe something they harvest like corn or butter or, you know, just something that's really been a point of pride for that state. But it's not just on the National Mall. You know, yesterday I had a Senate meeting and I was walking through Union Station afterwards, and Ford had a great exhibition with, you know, the innovation throughout the years in motor vehicles. So, you know, no matter where you go in D.C., there's something going on, and it's quite incredible and great to see. But I think what's most fun to see is tourists who come to D.C. and bring their, you know, kids and bring them to the museums and teach them about American history and what a great country we have. So it's just invigorating to see kids learn about our country and how great it is. And I can't tell you how great that is to see from the perspective of the next generation and how they're going to make the country even better.
Well, it's very interesting to hear a glimpse into how celebrations have been taking shape in the nation's capital and, of course, across the country. A lot to celebrate. And with that, Shane, I do wish you a happy 4th of July weekend. Stay cool out there and look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Thank you, Dan. Great to catch up with you, and I hope everyone has a great 4th of July.
Thank you, Shane. Again, today we have been joined by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor from Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. And as always, I'd like to point out to you, our listeners, our clients, you can, of course, locate the latest Washington Weekly publication now available for you on the website, ubs.com/Washington Weekly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully properly read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.